Hello, everyone. Y'all come on in. I've got a window open, hoping that's going to attract my cats. I don't know what's up with those kitties, but this morning they are acting like fools today. They are just, I got one right now, is just shredding the couch for no reason. I walked in, he was just going ham on it. Oh, and he's the skittish one, so it's always funny when he has his little personalities popping. So, all right. Today we are going to be talking about, hang on, I just had my notes up and then I opened up 400 different screens. Good morning, Jean. Val, my loyal attendee, my loyal live attendees. All right, let me do a couple of announcements. Today's call is all going to be about how to know if you're eating too damn much. There goes one of the cats in the window. I don't know if y'all can see him. He's going to be too far off in the corner. So we're going to talk about how to know if you're eating too damn much today. So this will be a really good one for y'all because this will be helpful for people who, if you hit stalls and plateaus, sometimes figuring out you're enough is going to be a key to unlocking things. I will tell you, if you're on a stall or plateau, it doesn't always mean that you need to eat less. I think our brain likes to jump there because we have diet mentality for years and years and years. You have done diets where you are supposed to eat basically, the path to salvation with diets is for you to starve. And as long as you're starving and miserable, you're on the right track, girl. That is not how losing weight should be. Losing weight should not be a method of madness where we are trudging through the swamps of with filled with none of the food we like to eat. It's just like a swamp of broccoli. Like it's not supposed to suck. And unfortunately, though, for many of you have done so many diets that have sucked that it becomes the ecosystem for you that unless it sucks, it won't work. The only way I can lose weight is to be miserable. And I just want to say that because I think it's so important that we all recognize when we go to trying to lose weight, when you are in no BS, if you like, and I want you all to ask yourself, like, what do I think weight loss is about? Like, what is the experience about? Like, how do I, when I think, if I lose weight, it means I have to do these things. I have to feel this way. I can't do these things anymore. I should be doing these things. If y'all will write some of that down, especially for people who you desperately want to lose weight, but you find yourself sitting around, not pulling the trigger, listening to things, but not actually doing it, like a telltale sign that you have got a working definition in your brain that's miserable is if you say to yourself, I keep listening, it all makes sense. It doesn't even seem like it should be that hard, but like I don't make my plan each day. Like I know I need to do the things, but I'm just not doing them. That is usually a red flag that in your psyche, somewhere deep down, that you're thinking like that's the, if you watch my coaching calls, you will often hear me say when someone says, I need to do the things, I'm just not doing them. And I will ask them, what are the things? I like to know what someone's unconscious bias is about what they think they need to do to lose weight. And this is important. Because if your unconscious bias, if your unconscious thinking is in order to lose weight, like, well, it's just going to be really hard to eat with other people. I wouldn't even know what I would do with myself at night. I'm just going to have to miss out on things. The last time I just barely could eat. All of that, if you think about it, if those are the things that are running underneath, why would you be motivated to do something even if it makes sense? You now have conflict. And it's easier for us to, I will promise you, even no matter what I tell you about the basics and stuff, if you don't look at those unconscious biases around your weight loss and what you have to do to lose weight, you will not pick what I tell you 9 times out of 10. Because even if what I tell you makes sense and has a hint of truth, it's like, well, I can see that. That kind of makes sense. If it's running up against, but you can't lose weight unless you're miserable. There's no way you could eat your favorite foods. But you always lose control. Blah, 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 blah. Whatever it is, right? You will pick that because it feels safe and it feels 100% true. Even though it's not 100% true, it feels 100% true. That's why it's not always enough for people to just listen to things that I tell you about, like, you know, getting your like enough cues dialed in and stuff. A lot of times what ends up happening is you can't pull the trigger until those things are investigated. And all we need to do is we don't need to disprove every single one before you can do something. We just need to create enough doubt and uncertainty about what you currently believe to open the door to trying something else to just see if that might work. If it might be like Corinne says it is. Because I will tell you, when I lost weight, I promise all of you, there were hard parts and there were easy parts. I always thought the hard parts were going to be like, you know, eating healthier, having to wait for hunger. I'm going to sneeze. It's coming somewhere. It's in there somewhere. I don't know if it's actually coming, but it feels like it's coming. I've been sneezing all morning. But for me, you know what the hardest parts were? It had nothing to do. Like I could, like when I started waiting for hunger, like slight hunger, I realized it wasn't as bad as I was making it out to be. But the hard part was trying it, getting enough courage to try, suspending my doubts to see if it would work. That was hard because it's scary. But actually waiting for hunger was not technically difficult. And when I waited for hunger, what I noticed was it wasn't even that hard. Slight hunger was not that crazy. It was like, oh, this is all we're doing? We're waiting until we're yawning and losing focus? That's my hunger signal? Wow. You mean my hunger signal isn't chewing my arm off, laying around writhing in misery like I used to do on Weight Watchers? Like, to me, the hard parts of weight loss, when I look back on all of it, it was challenging my insecurities. It was listening to how I started talking, like I was talking to myself and making myself talk better, whether I wanted to or not. That was hard. Oh my gosh. Hang on. Okay. I knew that was coming. And there's probably more. Just going to tell y'all right now. Thank you. Thank you. Bless me too. But my sinuses are buck wild right now. Oh, they've just been this way for a whole week. So this is what I want y'all to do, because we are going to be talking about enough and dialing in your enough cues today. The new material that you are getting, they'll be released in August in the No BS course. You're getting a whole new module called Making the Basics Easier. I think it's called Making the Basics Easier. Let's see. I don't have it on here, but I think it's called Making the Basics Easier. Is, I believe it's 9, maybe 8 lessons. I think there's like an intro. I don't really count intros as a lesson, but there's like 8 new lessons about how we make the basics easier, and it's not full of tactics. This call will talk about some tactics. What this new module is all about is helping all of you see the unconscious biases, why we do struggle with planning, why we struggle with spontaneity and flexibility, why we struggle with enough, why we struggle with waiting for hunger, when you really figure out what's going on for you when it comes to all of these things, like somebody in the comments, I don't know who said it, but somebody said, I hate it if your body is saying to stop eating. So this is one of the things. Because there is an unconscious bias there. Like, I would love for you to answer the question. Why? Because I want to eat more. That's where I feel shame. Jill, this is the problem that you're having. You're never going to want to stop it enough if you don't release the shame around stopping it enough. Because what happens is when we experience shame, if we don't challenge it and figure out why we feel that way, and then kind of realize that there might not be anything to be shameful about, then we're willing to start listening for enough and doing the hard part. And when I say hard, I don't mean emotionally hard. The hard part will be breaking the habit of the way you actually eat. The hard part will be messing up sometimes and having to talk, not like for you, Jill, in particular, if you feel shame that you don't want to stop, or that you feel at times you can't stop. If I will promise you, when we work on the shame around that, Jill, it will be easier to actually ask yourself to stop, to invite yourself to stop, to make it safe to stop. Right now, it's not safe to stop, because if you do, then you're feeling really bad about you wanted to keep going anyway. It's like you don't even relish in the glory of learning how. So your brain makes you keep eating simply so you don't have to have shameful thoughts. Now, you might have shameful thoughts about eating too much later, but you're used to that. You're used to that level of shame. You're used to beating yourself up over there, and you get the gift of feeling full. So it's not a bad trade. But if you're just going to stop it enough, not get to feel full and be ashamed that you wanted to keep eating, why would your brain ever be like, well, that's a good deal? Your brain's like, hell no. If I'm going to be ashamed anyway, I might as well have a belly full of Oreos while we're at it. I mean, let's just not be a kidder here. So I want you to think, Jill, about why would wanting to keep eating ever be something I'd be shameful about? Like, what is it that I'm thinking that makes me ashamed to stop eating, that I need to work on that, or that I even want to keep going, or that sometimes I can't stop myself? When we unlock that and we poke holes in it, then we offer ourselves the opportunity to be able to change how we're operating. So, like, if you want to answer in the comments, I got a hair. Y'all, I'm a mess today. I'm sneezing all over you. I walked out of my bedroom going like, look, I cleaned up for him. I have a shower. I got my good lippy on. I even straightened my hair. And all I've done is sneeze on y'all, have a cat in the window, and then get hair in my mouth. Best laid plans, everyone. All right. So, Jill, what I would like for you to be thinking about is, what is it that I think is so shameful about two things? If I keep eating, why is that shameful? If I stop eating, but I still want to keep going, why am I ashamed of that? Because here's the truth. Every human is naturally, primitively wired to keep eating. If we've ever had diets in our past where we did have to restrict severely and stuff, you have triggered like a caveman-like effect in your body. This is where diets, we have to be very careful about the ones we do, because when they're not intuitive, when they're not listening to the body, when they have arbitrary rules that are, you know, for marketing and things like that, they're not taking into consideration how we're naturally wired. So what happens is we have this like primitive trigger that goes off in our head. And that primitive trigger says, hold up, wait a minute. Like, I think when you don't eat till full, we must be going into a restriction period. Now, your primitive wiring thinks world famine. Modern day brain doesn't necessarily know that there's not a famine unless we tell it. That's why we have to quit doing the shame, like, you shouldn't want to keep eating. Nobody else does this but you. This is some kind of broken fucking flaw just in Jill. Jill is the one. No, it's at some point in your life, there was some shame built around your eating. That's okay. We all have different constructs, you know, built in about shame. So we just need to realize that's not like, I'm not doing anything bad. All I'm doing is reacting to some post, like past diet trauma. That's all that's really happening. If I want to keep eating, it's probably because I have an emotional need that needs to be met. For you, it sounds like when you want to keep eating and you know you are at enough, the emotional need is I need compassion and comfort. Because if I don't, I'm going to stop eating and I'm just going to think about my brokenness. I'm just going to think there must be something wrong with me. So that could be one of the things. Then the other thing is, like, if you do keep eating, every single person overeats a lot of times until they figure out how not to. The only way all of you ever figure out your enough signals, the only way you ever figure out how to calmly stop is to have times where you didn't calmly stop and you take a look and you deconstruct it to figure out, how do I do this differently next time? If I was yelling at myself, if I was distracted, like, what was happening? If there was a need going unmet, like every overeat is kind of telling me a subtle clue as to what needs to happen in order to make the next eating experience slightly different. And then every eating experience, my job is to make it slightly different. Until one day I figure out, like, oh, that was a thing to try. That really worked. As long as I stayed out of the shame, guess what? It's a lot easier for me to dissect. So somebody said, how do you then give yourself compassion? It's really fucking easy, y'all. If that cat, who in here, if that cat, I don't know, shredded my curtains, would go over there, strangle her, kick her, and call her a dumbass, a bad cat. You know, you're one of those orange cats. That means something's wrong with you. How many of you would do that to the cat? Look, no one. No one's ready to kill my cat. But guess what? How many of you would grab the kitty and go, oh, no, 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 no. We don't shred curtains. And maybe you would put her outside and you would close the door to teach her some boundaries. But you wouldn't be acting awful to the cat. You might go like, oh my God, Lakita, what are you doing? Like, sometimes I'll like look at myself and be like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? I'm over here eating, like, you know, duds at 10 o'clock at night. And then rather than going in like, oh my God, you shouldn't be doing this. You're broken. I just say like, look, we can just put these down. You probably were just having an urge and you ate some. Okay. Go put them in the pantry so that when you're in bed, you're not thinking about them. That's compassion. If your kid, like, think about, like, for all of you who are just like, I don't know how to give compassion to myself, then you must be a queen asshole. I guess when you go to the grocery store and someone is taking too long, you must cuss them up and down. You know what sometimes compassion is? Not saying a fucking thing. If you notice you make a mistake, or you don't like something you do, rather than bashing you, how about you just don't say anything at all? That's compassionate. This is one of those things. Y'all act like you don't know how to do compassion, but if I was to take someone you love and put them in front of you, And they were crying and telling you, you just don't understand. I am so bad. Something's wrong with me. I know how to do these things, but I'm not doing them. Most of you wouldn't throat punch them and kick them out of your house. If I had to guess, a lot of you would give them a hug and you would say, I don't think it's as bad as you're making it out to be. Like, what's really going on here? Can I help you solve this? Is there anything I can do to make you feel better? That's called compassion. This is like, compassion is not some nebulous thing. I think a lot of you, what you do though, is you mistake, like you're just not used to talking to yourself nice. And so you jump the shark to, well, that means I don't know how to do compassion. If you can give compassion to everyone else but yourself, you don't have a problem. You know how to do it. That's a good fucking thing. That's not a bad thing. That means you're highly skilled. A lot of y'all will be like, I do it for everybody else but me. Sad emoji. Wah, wah. No, we are not sad emojiing when we realize we have a strength of character. For fuck's sake, y'all. You know what we do? We say like, all right, I obviously have a talent here. I'm just not using it on myself. So if I was going to start talking to myself and treating myself like other people, what are the common threads? For example, if other people need things, I'm really good at reprioritizing. I just happen to reprioritize my needs to the bottom of the list. I'm obviously good at prioritizing. I just need to figure out now, like, how can I help them without sacrificing me? Because you're operating off one formula. To help them, I have to drop all of these things for me. That must be the only thing on the list I could get rid of. When very often it's not. And then Dot is saying, I feel out of compassion for anyone, my kids, the world, and then I beat myself up for that on top of everything else. Okay, so here's what we can do. How about we have no compassion for the world and the children and stuff, and start with the first step on having compassion, understanding, patience, not as much vitriol, is to just start with me. I'll continue to bitch and moan about everybody else. Seriously. That's what I do. I put the queen first. I'm going to make sure the queen feels pretty good about herself. I mean, half the time when I do a Marco Polo to Jane, I am bitching about everyone else in the world. I am bitching about the world. I am bitching about people. I am bitching, bitching, bitching. So that I feel better. So that I get it out of my system. Instead of having to go and do things, I'm just like, I'm just going to just rattle on here. I'm going to have my fucking moment or my half hour moment, however long my Marco Polo takes. Sometimes they're 40 minutes long. And then I'm going to have compassion for me. I needed that bitch session. I didn't have fucks to give today. I'm glad I know that. That's why I think bitching, moaning, complaining, and blaming sometimes is very useful. When it's not useful is when you're blaming and then excusing why you're not going to do for you over things. A lot of times I'll blame, like, this is why this is harder, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to, which is hugely different. Okay. We may have to edit this one again today. For some reason, I kicked the last two Wednesdays, I've kicked it off a little bit with some other stuff. Just make sure we put, like, somebody, Kathy, get with me, because last week we didn't edit it the way I kind of wanted it to. Get with me this week on when I say let's edit these, what I really mean, just so we have a good process going forward, because I don't think I was super clear last week with everyone. Okay, so let's get to the topic at hand, and I'm going to tie it together. How do you get your hunger cues back? So we are going to be talking about Is that what today is? Do I have the wrong? Wait a minute. I've got the wrong one up. Hang on. I've got 2 pages docs. No wonder. Hang on. I got to get to the right one. I was like, I think I talked about that last week. Okay. Sorry, y'all. I didn't close my doc out from last week. How to know if you're eating too damn much. The first thing we have to do is we have to realize that we are going to have to go through periods where we have to test our enoughness. So as you are losing weight, you will need to test your enoughness. This is not a, I figure out my enoughness on day one or, you know, month one. And then for the rest of time, that's going to be the enough cues. Sometimes your cues will change as you get smaller. Your enoughness probably will change as you get smaller. It doesn't mean, like, this is what I don't want anybody thinking, that as you get smaller, you barely eat. It can feel like you're barely eating when you're used to eating like I was used to eating. You know, I used to eat a lot, like just a lot. Like if we ordered pizza, we got two, so I could have one. If I got ice cream, I sat down with a half a gallon because I was just going to eat till it was gone or until I was miserable. If we went to a buffet, at least 3 plates. Otherwise, I didn't feel like I was getting my money's worth. And I grew up that way. Now, I remember being told, get your money's worth. We don't know when we're going to eat next. So I just, like, as an adult, it just made sense to me. Well, it's a buffet. You should probably, if you don't walk out of here with your eyes rolling back, you know, into your head and a button threatening to poke somebody's eye out when it flies off of you, you didn't do it right. Like when I talked to y'all earlier about those unconscious biases, I had a lot of unconscious thinking around fullness and all the things. So we have to realize is that when you're losing weight, your enoughness is going to change because your body, as it gets smaller, has less energy demands. That's why it's really important for all of us to be working on what we think about food, you know, overcoming the emotional side of eating. Because if you just eat according to what your body really needs, it's going to be vastly different than eating based on your bad days, based on comfort, based on relaxing, based on what everybody else is doing, based on fear of wasting, based on what's being offered to you in the moment. Like, if you clean all that stuff up, it's not as much food, but it's not so little. My goal is to teach all of you how to eat enough food that makes you physically feel amazing so that you have the energy to do your days, that you feel fueled. And then we sprinkle in joy and pleasure. We put all of those ingredients on top of that. And then you have a pretty fucking amazing food life. The problem comes when we are overly reliant on the food to be our life, to be how we cope with life. Food was never really intended to be anything but what we need to survive and then commune. Those are like the two, like if I was to boil it down to, tell me about food. Food has like 2 to 3 main purposes. And if I had to rank them in order, I've never taught this, but let me think about this. Number one would be just sustainability. Like literally to be alive, to have good health, to live a long time, to be able to complete and do the things you want in life. That's the number one thing. The second thing I think food's major role is communal. If you look at history, you know, whether you believe in God or not, it doesn't really matter where your stance is religiously. If you just look at history, like in America, we had Thanksgiving. In Christianity, you know, Jesus's last meal was a supper. There's just all these instances where you can tell human dynamics and human psychology was food is an important part of how we gather. So we want to include that too. And then the third major component of food, and this is not divided equally in thirds, but the third one would be comfort. When we're born, we come out the womb, and the first thing we want to do is suck a tit. We're naked, we're cold, we're scared to death, we don't know what to do. Shove us on a titty, guess what we do? We stop crying. I still remember the only way I could calm Logan down the first probably 9 months of his life. He was easily overstimulated. We didn't know he had autism back in the day, but oh my gosh, my baby definitely, like, it would never fail. If he heard a siren, and it could be 10 miles away, if that child heard a siren, if something was loud, we couldn't go into loud places, nothing. He just unraveled. And of course, he's a baby, so all he knows to do is scream his head off. And the only thing that ever soothed him was to put him on a titty. And I can remember time after time, rocking him and nursing him and watching him with little tears still coming down his face. And he would just pull on his ear and just just comforting him himself. So the reason why I tell all of you this is because the majority of our eating is going to be for that physical need. And then we layer in communal and we layer in comfort. But when you're sprinkling that stuff on, instead of primarily I'm eating for my comfort needs, sometimes I'm doing physical, but rarely. I override that all the damn time. I don't give a damn how I feel. I'm just going to eat this way. And then we have a lot of communal eating on top where that's the only way we know how to commune with people. That's where we start figuring out there are other things we need to be doing and we need to be thinking about when it comes to food. So we have to clean up all that thinking around it. So you will need to eat less. That's why it is important to be thinking about how are you using food? Is this how you want to use food? This is why I have you plan, because planning to me is the number one way to ensure that you take into consideration physical, communal, emotional, that you get all of those in there and that you're getting them in there in the right ratios. And there's no set ratio, but every day where you understand today's needs are this. Just like for me, very often, I'll want to go out on Saturday nights with Chris. Well, I can't drink on Saturday nights. Why? I do a lot of calls on Sundays. That's my big work day. So when I'm planning my week, I don't plan communal eating on a Saturday, even though that's when we want to do date night. I have to figure out another way to have community, even if that means going out and not drinking and experiencing community in a new way. That's why I love for y'all to do planning so that you can take all the needs in consideration. Because like today is a good example. I have got 5 hours of calls. I don't stop until like 3 o'clock. Like it's like 10 to three, whatever that, I don't know how many hours that is. I think that's five. No breaks. And last night and yesterday, I really had to prioritize food on physical need so that I would have the energy today to do what I need to do. Yesterday was not a day to comfort eat. Yesterday was not one of those pleasure eating days. Yesterday was not a communal eating day. Now, sometimes you can mix those things in there and it's fine. But for me, I knew yesterday the priority had to be like, what are we eating today that makes the most sense knowing you have a huge day on camera tomorrow? And that's how I planned. to take care of my needs. For me, that is comforting. It's getting the comfort in another way other than just the food. That's why we have to think about these things more often. So you will always, if you have been eating to just clean your plate, get your money's worth, because it was offered to you, you don't want to hurt people's feelings. You don't have any other way to relax. If all of that's going on, when you start eating for physical need as the primary gauge of what we're going to be doing, it's going to feel like less. It should be less. And it will be less because we need to lower that food to the amount your body needs so that you can see the gap between this is physically what I need and all these emotions left over are the ones I've got to start taking care of in new ways. That's why I think weight loss is so good emotionally for us. It's because for those of us who use food emotionally, when you take away the way that you've been comforting yourself, you're forced to do one of two things. Well, first, you just get super aware, like, oh gosh, this is what I've really been needing all this time. Then we have two options. We start meeting our truest, deepest needs, which leads to a more fulfilled, better life that's in our control, where we fix things, where we change as a person. We learn how to be better to ourselves. We learn how to talk to ourselves. We just learn how to meet our own needs. Or we go back to the eating. And we're like, you know what? I just don't think I can do all that. I think I'm just going to eat and be miserable. Because the eating will never fulfill long-term those needs. It will put a Band-Aid on it. But when your life and your emotional needs are only met with food, and you need things like compassion, a new way to talk to yourself, to believe in yourself, to try new things, to be less hard on yourself, like all of that stuff, that would be like somebody taking a steel rod, jamming it through your femoral artery, and you'll be like, man, who's got a Johnson & Johnson? Who's got a Band-Aid? And I don't want a toe Band-Aid. Get me one that's like for an elbow. That's what eating is like doing. It's like thinking that that is going to fix a femoral artery gouging. Not going to happen. You'll feel like you're doing something for it, but you're ignoring that you're getting ready to die. All right. Then, let's see. One of the things that I think is important for all of you is that when you know, like you're trying to get back in touch with enoughness, is that you've got to recalibrate it every so often. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to start doing this, especially for those of you who stall out or hit a plateau. I want you to put on your calendar, everybody, pick your favorite day of the month. It could be the first, the 7th, it can always, like the 12th of the month is one of my favorite days because that's my birthday. And so every month on the 12th, it's an easy number to remember. So everyone think about a number. They'd be like, this is now going to be like my favorite day of the month whenever this number hits. Tell me in the chat what your favorite number is going to be. And it can be the 1st, it can be the 15th. A lot of people love 29, 9, 7, 14, 3. Some people will pick the first of the month. Some people will pick middle of the month. Some people will pick end of the month. Like if you're like me, I also like to have a fresh start. So the 1st and the 12th tend to be numbers I really like in the month. All right, great. Now, whatever number you just said is now your, I'm testing my enough signals every month until I lose all my weight. And then I will even do it in maintenance for at least 6 months. Whatever day you picked, that is now testing day. And so that's the first thing we have to do is we have to have a day each month where we really are like, woo, today's the day. it's time to play the Hunger Games. I'm going to retest all my enough signals. And then here's ways that you can do it. We call this one a level one. Level one is where you try to leave two bites behind at your main meals. Don't worry about it for snacks, just your main meals. Now, leaving bites behind, I do want to say this because this gets misconstrued all the time. Leaving bites behind does not mean you're going to lose weight. If I went into my fridge, if I went in there right now and I made me a platter of food and I left two bites behind, but it was a fucking platter of food, that doesn't mean I'm going to lose weight. Leaving bites behind is a practice that we try for when people are afraid to stop at enough. So for some people, leaving a couple of bites behind when they've just gotten used to how much they're eating helps a lot. For people who think like eating to enough doesn't really matter, doesn't add up, won't be enough, leaving two bites behind and saving it in a freezer bag so that you can see how much food actually gets left behind in the matter of a week if you leave two bites behind, what it shows you is that a little bit adds up instead of a little bit isn't good enough. It's just a hack to get you thinking differently. Instead of a little bit doesn't add, or a little bit isn't good enough, now we want to see like, oh, a little bit adds up and adds up pretty fast. If you've ever looked in our Facebook group when people have done the experiment, if this is you, try leaving two bites behind. Get you a Ziploc freezer bag. Shove that food in the bag and put it in the freezer and just do it for a week. You will almost fill a bag full of food. It's that big of a deal. So it shows you compound effect. And then the other beautiful thing about leaving two bites behind is for people who struggle with stopping at enough because they don't like wasting food. We have to baby step our way in sometimes to leaving food behind so that you see, oh, like all of a sudden I didn't just take all the cash out of my bank account, throw kerosene on it and burn it in the backyard because I didn't eat a chicken wing. Sometimes we have to see how ridiculous we're being about cleaning our plates. We're in a day and age where most of us are not like in the depression. If you're on this call, I know you're not in the depression stage. Most of you have an iPhone. You got, like, I'm not saying we all rolling around like a Rockefeller up in here, but I will say this. Most of us, we keep overeating with the excuse I need to clean my plate when times have changed. And we are just reliving what was told to us from people who actually lived during times where it was like you really needed to not be wasting food. It was a life or death thing. Most of us are not living in a life or death situation over it. We're going to the Cheesecake Factory and polishing off our plate saying, I hate to waste food. Like, we got to-go boxes now. You can put shit in the freezer. You can put shit in a refrigerator. And the other thing that it does is if you're afraid of wasting food, and that's why you keep eating past enough, you are never going to lower your grocery bill by overeating every meal. Ever. How are you going to be able to recalibrate how much to cook and buy if you keep eating at max volume? Because you're buying and making grocery lists based on consumption. So you have to change consumption in order to know what you need to plan and buy for. That's how it works. So if you actually want to save, if you really want to save money, if you're really in it for that, then do it the way that actually makes sense. Don't overeat thinking I'm not wasting money. Like, what? When you overeat, that is wasting money. It just is. All right, level two is now you start like on that day that you're going to do this, you serve yourself less. So you're just going to serve yourself less. Just a little bit. one scoop less, a sliver less. You're really just going to, like, today I'm going to try serving myself a little less, and I'm going to see if that's enough. Sometimes, like, if you try this every month, you'll run up on a month where it's like, oh, I don't need to, like, that it's now too much. It's not enough food. So I know I need to go back to the level I was at. But some of you, when you make this slight change every month, you'll notice, like, it only takes a few months of trying this to where I get to a really comfortable level of eating, where my food is lasting me 3 to 5 hours. I'm sprinkling in pleasure and comfort and joy and community. I'm also got plenty of energy foods. And you start thinking, like, this is a pretty good deal. I can eat to enough. I'm eating foods I like. Like, this works. This is probably why Corinne says this is an easy way to lose weight. Because I'm, like, meeting my own needs. I'm now meeting my emotional needs. I'm enjoying my food. And I'm eating to enough. I mean, that's a pretty good win and deal if you think about it. Then there is a level three. And level three is where we call it the halftime method. The halftime method, it gives you a chance to slow your eating down. That is the purpose of the halftime method. It is to make sure that you're eating slow and that you have these really simple built-in pauses to think, so that you're not just eating on autopilot. Now, for some of you, that's hard. Jill might be one of them, because if Jill is using the halftime method and she eats to halfway, if she pauses and she thinks, oh my God, you fat fuck, you should never have to do this. You're probably the only no BS woman that has to try the halftime method. Or you think, oh my God, something's wrong with you because you want to keep eating and you know you're at enough. If her brain goes ham like that, that doesn't mean something's wrong with her. It doesn't mean to keep eating either. It means to take a note. Oh, I need to, like, work on why this is very normal. I need to tell myself, like, oh, there's nothing wrong with me. Lots of people want to keep eating. Even thin people want to keep eating past enough. Everybody does, especially if it tastes good. That seems like a very normal thing to want. I'm just not going to do it today because I also have other things I want. And I'm not going to beat myself up over this anymore. I'm just kind of done with the shame train. So what you do with the halftime method is you make a plate. You figure out what half the plate looks like. You eat. And you put your fork down. And I just suggest taking a 1 to 2 minute break. You do not need long. You don't need to, like, sit there for 10, 15 minutes, let your food go cold, all that kind of stuff. You need just enough time to get free of your immediate emotional reaction to stopping and to bring your conscious brain online. It's all you got to do. And then once you're no longer calling yourself names or just wanting to keep eating, stuff like, just take a few deep breaths and say, on the inside, it doesn't have to be a public display. You just say, I'm just trying to figure out if I need to keep eating or not. That's it. The goal here is to learn my enough signals. And if it makes you feel better, this is what I usually tell myself. If you want to keep eating, you absolutely can. But we're not going to not learn our enough signals simply because you want to keep eating. We're just going to gift ourselves this information. And then we can work on figuring out why we want to keep eating. So the way that I do it, and I think the way Kathy does it, is we eat half the food. We take our break, we figure out our signals, we figure out if we want to keep eating, if we like our reason. Like for me, a lot of times for me, I'll keep eating, especially if I'm like, let me think about the rest of the day. So if I'm doing it for lunch, well, let me say I kind of did it this morning at breakfast. So I ate breakfast this morning before I was hungry because I just wasn't hungry this morning, but the long day ahead of me. And if I waited for hunger, it probably would strike in about 10 minutes when I'm going straight into another call because it's coming up on 11 o'clock and I wouldn't be able to eat. And so I ate and I stopped for a little bit and I sat there and thought, ugh, not only did I not start at hunger, but I was already feeling almost full. But I hadn't ate much. So I took a small break and I sat there for a little bit and I really thought it through and I was like, you know what? I'm going to finish this because I also know I don't want to set myself up to be hungry in the middle of a time when there will be nothing I can do about it. And I don't think that'll be good for my calls. I don't think that's good for my people. It's not good for my mood. It's not good for my energy levels. And so I finished my breakfast. That's doing doable hunger. Doable hunger is more, it's not just waiting for hunger and asking, have I had enough? Doable hunger is about getting in touch with your deepest needs. Being willing to listen to your body, listen to your day, think things through, make decisions that you're proud of, or at least make decisions that you're like, I think this is in my best interest. It's not about right or wrong. It's not about a certain amount. And this is why I tell y'all, it's always going to change. Back at like, if let's say that, it's so funny. I was doing the Queen of Your Life. If you haven't signed up for the virtual Queen of Your Life camp coming up in September, you should get signed up. This, I'm doing the worksheets. If you don't know, Queen of Your Life is, it is about, it's kind of the camp I wrote based on me. Like it was really fun writing this one because I had to sit and think really hard. And it was very emotional for me. Like it was really emotional because I had to sit and think about why I'm successful. Like I had to actually make myself sit and think good things, break down my processes. I couldn't sit there and think I wasn't good enough. I couldn't sit there and think about like future, like what I need to accomplish in order to be good enough. I really had to sit and take stock and credit of several things. You know, only a small percentage of people lose 100 pounds and keep it off in the world. I'm one of them because I figured all this stuff out that I try to teach y'all. I'm a female that started her own business. And to even start a business that lasts more than a year or 5 years is phenomenal, but our business is ranked in like the top 1% in the United States in success, longevity. Like there's several things. My marriage, I have an amazing marriage that has survived a child with, you know, autism. Just so many, I didn't go to college. You know, when I had to look through all that stuff, it's very humbling. And it forced me to really have to take credit because I don't like taking credit for things. I always think I can do better. Like one of my strengths is I just don't sit around and think about, like, I don't relish in greatness. I'm challenged to always try to do more. For me, that's exciting. But it was, you know, it was amazing doing it. And so this morning I'm doing y'all's worksheets because I always do the worksheets because I'm like, I want to do the worksheets. We give y'all the examples of what I answer in your workbook. One, to help y'all see the types of answers, because sometimes people get stuck. You know, they're like, oh, I don't know if I want to come to this camp because I don't know how to, I'm not a good journaler. Well, you get my exact answers. And that helps you say like, oh, this is the kind of answers to look for. We're just trying to make the journaling part a lot easier on you. And then the other thing is I like to test them before I give them to you to make sure they make sense, that they're actually helpful. And so I was doing them this morning and I had to list my strengths and weaknesses. And I had to like list all these things. And so for all of you, I want you to think, if you're sitting there right now and somehow you think you can't lose weight, that something's so wrong with you, that is okay. That is just a web of thoughts that have been going around in your head for a long time. And we haven't tried to prove them wrong. We've just believed them. And whatever we believe, we usually end up creating the reality until someone shows us how to interrupt that stuff. That's what we do in No BS. But I just want to tell you, there's no one who was more fucking broken than I was. Uneducated, like, I don't know, like all the things. And somehow I just figured things out a little bit at a time. And so when y'all are thinking about you're enough, because that's to me the hardest basic to get is enough. Because on the enough side is where so much of our overeating takes place. That is where fuck it eating happens usually. That is where we're comfort eating. There's so many things that come up on that side. You can unwind it. But you're going to need to every month dial back in, test those cues, make that your day that you reassess, that you look at things, that you question what you're doing. Enough feels like my Everest. It makes sense why it's the toughest one. It's where so much for most of us, I will tell you, I really do believe this for women in particular. The reason why enough is so hard is because it's the only place we get a break from ourselves and the world. For a lot of you, that's the main thing. If it was just habit, if it was just because like, well, my husband, doesn't like it when I leave food on my plate. If that was the only thing going on, it would be real easy to fix. Because you would just look at your husband and you would just say like, hey, actually, I'm leaving food behind because I'm fixing to save us some money. The more food I leave behind, the more I learn how much to buy at the store. You fix to see this grocery bill going down. How about that for wasting food, bro? But that is not why enough is tough. Enough is tough usually because we eat past enough to get away from the harsh voice we carry inside. We eat past enough because it's the only way to relax. It's the only way we know how. It's the only break we get in the day. And so we have to find those things that enough is doing for us, make that list. And then we have to get help on figuring out how do we meet those needs in new ways. And then all of you who were saying, I eat past enough, you better be an Ask Coaches every day and twice on Sunday. Go to Ask Coaches and talk about why it's so hard for you. Let them help you poke holes in all of it. Let them help you figure out what those needs are. Let them help you brainstorm how to start making room for those needs so that you don't feel like you have to keep eating past enough as the only way to do so. Okay. Try one of the methods. Post in the Facebook group. If you love this call, make sure you post in the Facebook group. Kathy, I don't think we edit it. Just leave it as it is. Let's just go with this because I tied it kind of all the way back to those unconscious biases. It'll be fine. All right. Y'all have a good one. I will see y'all on Sunday for some coaching. Be good until Sunday. Bye, y'all.